Welcome back, Children of the Revolution. This is Daddy Ben Bear, Bren Brown Jr. here on aceofspadespdx.com's What You're Not Listening To, the audio educational and anthology series, and I'm your host, show producer, webmaster, audio engineer, researcher, video promo producer, and writer, doing it all here on the DIY for all of you, commercial and sponsor-free, yes. And today is Buy Visibility Day 2020, and today we're looking at Phil May, Who Was the Prettiest Thing. A tribute to one of the greatest cult bands of all time, which featured lead singer and songwriter Phil May, rock and roll's first true bisexual frontman. I found out about the amazing history of the Pretty Things in a very roundabout way, as I'm certain many others do, who weren't around during their initial swinging London period of brief commercial success. I was at the library and reading a book about Led Zeppelin. Guitar legend Jimmy Page was quoted about how amazing the Pretty Things were, a group he had signed to a Swan Song label, and was disappointed their albums weren't selling well. The library didn't have any recordings in their collection of the band. Undaunted, I went to the one place I thought would have some, the radio station I interned at. I asked one of the male DJs there about the band. He looked at me strangely and then said, "Oh yeah, the band with the queer lead singer. Won't play that shit. It's bad enough I gotta play that faggot Bowie." Mind you, this was a rock radio station that once described itself as progressive and underground. Like the British heavy rock band UFO once sang, "Oh my, how the times have changed." That singer was Phil May. He fronted the Pretty Things, a band whom, at the time, were reported to have the longest hair of any male act in England of the early 1960s. Dick Taylor, their original guitarist, was a founding member of the Rolling Stones. They weren't Beatles pinups, were raunchier and dirtier sounding than the Stones, no ultra-flash guitar playing like the Yardbirds, not as loud as the Who, no English stylistic musings like the Kinks, and no pop sensibility like the Dave Clark Five. What they did have was an amazing group bond, ultra-freak energy, and a sound that would come to define what is now labeled garage rock. What they lacked in virtuosity, they more than made up for in heart and soul. The Pretty Things would go on to have a 55-year career as a recording and touring outfit. Unlike their initial contemporaries, the band's legend and fan base grew as the years went by, even crashing the servers of a reunion gig live-streamed on the internet several years ago due to overwhelming demand. They would break up and reform often, with May being the sole member in all lineups. May conceived of the very first rock opera, SF Sorrow, released 6 months before Tommy by The Who in the UK. In hindsight, it sounds more Pink Floyd than even The Wall did. An American pressing, released by Motown, yes, that Motown, was riddled with a strange cutout cover and truly poor mixing. During the late 1960s, just to make some extra money, the band would record under the name Electric Banana, providing the music to several low-budget films, which ran the gamut from horror flicks to softcore porn. How important were the band to the London music scene of the mid-1960s? David Bowie recorded two, count them, two Pretty Things covers for his album Pinups, and name-checked the group in two other songs. Part of the mystery of the band is that they didn't even tour the U.S. until the 1970s. Many people weren't aware or even cared that their lead singer was openly bisexual, with May often changing pronouns during live performances of their catalog. Did this cause the band not to get covered by either the mainstream press or even queer media? Possibly. Researchers at Columbia University's Mailman School of Public Health stated in a recent survey that most bisexuals will not come out for fear of stigma, even in today's so-called more liberal climate. It is a reflection of deeply held misconceptions and myths about bisexuals, and sadly, HIV stigma also comes into play. What sets May apart, who left us on the 15th of May, yes, earlier this year, and the rest of the Pretty Things, was attitude. They were able to record garage rock, British R&B, psychedelia, hard rock, glam rock, and even new wave with a cohesiveness and diversity that could only be rivaled by another legendary British band, King Crimson. The liner notes of their German reissue of Crosstalk in 1980 stated, "They literally had nothing to lose and nothing to prove." So, how did I get to first hear the band? One of the other DJs, who knew I was queer myself, gave me a copy of the Silk Torpedo album out of the archive the station had. "Phil May, I didn't even know you, but after listening to that record and knowing only a small part of who you were from the spiteful and negative comments of a hater, you changed my life forever." And of course, thank you to DJ C for reminding me not everyone in the world is a douchebag. This tribute to the music of May and the Pretty Things from 1964 through 1980 is as much a tribute to you as it is to him. Alrighty, Children of the Revolution, we're going to be kicking all off here with a track from 1965's album Get the Picture with a question mark. It was also their last single. They only had a handful of singles to chart in the UK. It was their last one to actually make the UK chart before they became more of an album-oriented a rock band. This is Midnight to Six Man, and we'll see you at about the half-hour mark.
Face. Sitting alone on a bench with you, tipping.
Alrighty, welcome back, children of the revolution, to what you're not listening to, the Audio Education Anthology Series on Ace of Spades, PDX.com, and I'm still your all-around monkey bear, Daddy Ben Bear, Ben Brown Jr. here, on a tribute to the late Phil May, who we lost on the 15th of May earlier this year, and he was the prettiest thing. So we're looking at the career of Phil May and the pretty things, and my God, does this seem like a bunch of different types of artists? Yes, because that's just how versatile they were, just kind of rolling with the punches and doing their own thing. This is why we still love them. And we are so glad that all of you are here, children. And let's recap what we've heard in the first part of our show before we get into the second part, because it's going to get even crazier. Kicked it all off with Midnight to Six Man from 65's Get the Picture. Following that was their first of only two LPs to chart here in the United States. And they were both on the Swan Song label. Yes, founded by Jimmy Page of Led Zeppelin. And that was the title track to 74's Singapore, Silk Torpedo. Following that, from one of their most highly regarded albums in their career, Parachute from 1970, Cries from the Midnight Circus. Yeah, with them changing their sound absolutely once again. Following that was their debut single and one that David Bowie famously covered almost literally note for note. And it was released in 64 and it was a UK single A-side there. And here on the US version, they had a different track listing on the album and eventually ended up on the album The Pretty Things, their debut here. And that was Rosalind. Following that, another UK single A-side, 1967's Defecting Grey. Woo! Yeah, it was the summer of love, children. And the song we just heard, their second of only two charting LPs in the United States. Again, once again, the Swan Song that from the album Savage Eye from 1976, Remember That Boy. And I had mentioned earlier that they had broken up and reformed many times during their career. After SF Sorrow came out, they actually broke up for about 2 years, reformed, and released an album on Warner Brothers, and then continued through 76, broke up again, and then came out with an album in 1980 called Crosstalk. And after 1980, the band only recorded three albums, literally one a decade. One in 99 called Rage Before Beauty, excellent, and the even superior 2007's Balboa Island. And their last proper release, The Sweet Pretty Things Are in Bed Now, of course, from 2015. All right, and we're going to be kicking off the second part of our show. Now, there are two versions of this song. There's one on the, this is the Electric Banana, which was the Pretty Things Incognito, hey, and from the album What's Good for the Goose. Now, the actual soundtrack cut is much more psychedelic. This is much more, this is a live version of that song, and I just think was superior of the two. They're both excellent, but this one I think is the winner. A live version of It'll Never Be Me from 1967 by The Pretty Things as the Electric Banana, and we'll see you just before the grand finale.
bills on a light lay. The morning scream beneath the traffic speed. The razor burn commuter, if I chose, it didn't seem official to me. The office staff begin the hundred, making hours and the money flow. The guilty lovers keep their secret and hope it doesn't show. They hope it doesn't show. Catches the train up every morning from his Gordon executive estates. She's convinced he needs a new future, but she's prepared to wait. He swears to step cleanly from a marriage that's become so tangled like a fuse. She knows he's lying for his pleasures, but doesn't see her cry. She doesn't see her cry. A secret fear's become too strong, seeing that what little love she has, she's losing. He's that type that manages to sleep at night. The guilt is safely locked away, but it was just another day, and he's so tired. Yeah! Like a sacrifice, he was closing in. Her mother sat on the end of a bed through the dark hours of the night, wagging her finger saying, honey, this just isn't right. Will you give it tonight? Oh no,
this love is such a bitch.
Baby. baby.
Thank you.
your ear, the words won't disappear. He'll take your eyes out for a ride through an eyeglass of tears, it's not clear. Oh, on Saturday, white vision's black, Mr. Malady. Deep sky of milk, you're drinking silk, you lost the runcible spoon. On satin plates, young names wait, be demanding the air of the moon.
And welcome back, Children of the Revolution, to what you're now listening to, the audio educational and anthology series here on Ace of Spades, PDX.com. Winding down on our very special Bi Visibility Day 2020 show featuring Phil May of The Pretty Things. Yes, this has been such a wonderful trip. And for those of you who've never heard the band, hopefully you've picked a few favorites. And trust me, there's so much more to discover. Let's recap what we've heard in the second part of our show before we get into the very personal grand finale. Starting it off, a live version of It'll Never Be Me from 1967 from What's Good for the Goose film by The Electric Banana, which was The Pretty Things in disguise. Following that was from their last album of for quite a while before 1980s Crosstalk. That was Office Love. Yes, but they went a little new wave. After that, I'm a Roadrunner. From 1964, from their debut album, The Pretty Things. Following that, Death of a Socialite from 1967's Emotions, their third album. Following that, from 1972's Freeway Madness, Havana Bound. They're getting really, really hard rocky boogie rock there. After that, from their psychedelic masterpiece from 1968, from SF Sorrow, that was Baron Saturday. And the song we just heard, an electro garage rock freakout, if there ever was one, launched probably 1,000 bad careers, including my band, which I'll talk about in a minute. From 1965, the UK single B-side of the first song in our show, Midnight Six Man, that is Get a Buzz. All right, and here we are. The only album I've picked two songs from, and you know, I probably could have picked something else, probably from Balboa Island or something, but this song in particular really, really hooked me to The Pretty Things. It was from the album that DJ C, names have been, names are being disguised to hide the innocent and, of course, the guilty douchebag from earlier that I spoke about. The album Singapore Silk Torpedo. I'm again, once again, out of it. This brings back a lot of great memories and what should have been somebody trying to, you know, wreck, you know, what I was and who I was. Somebody else decided to say, hey, let me help you out. And, you know, that's what I guess what people like myself who are queer people, whether you're gay, straight, bi, trans, questioning, intersex, sometimes we just need people to just be there and be supportive and just say, hey, you know, that makes all the difference. I know it did for me. And I remember being in a band. Shortly after hearing The Pretty Things and all these garage rock bands, I decided to start one of my own. We called ourselves Two-Bit Trash because no one would book us as dime store hookers. People hated us. They threw shit at us. We were awful. One of the greatest experiences of my life. I wouldn't change it for a moment. But I actually, during our early sets, this was one of the songs from this album. That this and the New York Dolls were another one. I begged the band to learn and play, and we didn't do it justice. But God, it was so much fun to do. And if you have questions, feedback, comments, love letters, dedications, and requests are always welcome. Please drop me a line at DaddyBenBear, one word, DaddyBenBear@gmail.com. Love to you all. Happy Bi Visibility Day to the late Phil May and his family. Love, love, love. And to the rest of you, love to you all. This is probably a metaphor for everything that is the career of The Pretty Things. Maybe you tried.